The Brighton Boys in the Radio Service by James R. Driscoll. Chapter 1 For Uncle Sam. Now was the time for all good men to come to the aid of their... It was that old practice sentence of typists, which is as old as our typewriting machines, and Joe Harned, seated before the old-style, noisy, but still capable machine in Philip Burton's telegraph office, had rattled it off 25 times and was on his 26th when suddenly, very suddenly, his mind began to work. Or rather it might be said that an idea, the big idea, danced unceremoniously into his brain, and, beginning to take definite and concrete form, chased a score of other smaller ideas through all the thought channels of his handsome, boyish, well-rounded head. He came to a full stop and gazed steadily at the upturned paper and the typewriter in front of him. 25 times he had written that sentence, and 25 times, with mechanical precision and true adherence to time-honored custom, he had finished it by tapping off the words "party." It was a formula of words which some genius had devised for the fingering practice it gave one on the keyboard, and Joe Harned had written it hundreds of times before, just as thousands of others had done without giving a thought to its meaning, or the significance that a substitution of a single word would give it. He read it again, and, as if it were the result of an uncontrollable impulse, his fingers began the rapid tap, 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 and this time he substituted the new word that the big idea had suddenly thrust into his mind. Joe gave the roller a twirl, the paper rolled out, dropped to the floor, and he grasped for it eagerly. Even Joe was surprised. He hadn't realized that in his enthusiastic haste he had pushed down the key marked "caps." In bold, outstanding letters near the bottom of the sheet was an historic sentence, and Joe Harned, Harned of Brighton Academy, had devised it. Now was the time for all good men to come to the aid of their country. Joe gazed at it again for a moment, and then let his eyes travel across the little office to where the red-headed, freckled-faced, big-hearted, and impetuous Jerry Macklin was rapping away at another typewriter. And 2 feet away from Jerry, Slim Goodwin, 170 pounds in his stocking feet and 5'4" in his gym suit, was working the telegraph key with a pudgy hand. "Jerry," he called. "Oh, Slim, come over here a moment, both of you. I want to show you something." Jerry immediately ceased typewriting, but Slim was reluctant to release the telegraph key. However, as Joe began folding the paper in such a way that only the last sentence showed, their aroused curiosity brought both of them to his side. "Read that," said Joe, trying to suppress the quiver in his voice and holding the paper up for them. "Read it carefully." One lad on either side of him, they hung over Joe's shoulder and followed his bidding. "Right!" shouted Jerry as he came to the last word. "Joe, you're a wizard! What you've written there is the truth!" "Ain't it? I mean, isn't it?" added the delicate Slim Goodwin, and partly to hide his grammatical error, but mostly to express his enthusiasm. He gave Joe a 170-pound whack on the back that sent him sliding out of the chair and halfway under the typewriter table. "Say," Joe remonstrated, but just then Philip Burton, telegraph operator and genial good friend of all three of the lads, bustled into the room, a sheaf of yellow telegrams in his hand. "What's all the excitement?" he asked, striding toward the typewriter just left by Jerry. "Why," explained Slim, "Joe's just done something that means something." "Impossible," said Mr. Burton, turning towards them with one of those irresistible smiles which long ago had made him the boy's confidant. "If you don't believe it, read this," commanded Jerry, thrusting the paper before the telegrapher's eyes. Mr. Burton read through it and turned to the three boys again. "Well," he asked. "It means what it says," explained Jerry. "Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their country." "And we're good men, aren't we?" demanded Slim, drawing up his stomach and throwing out his chest as he straightened up to his full 5'4" in his gym suit. "None better anywhere," said Mr. Burton, in a tone that showed that he meant it. "But just how do you contemplate going to the aid of the country?" It was Joe's turn to say something, and he did. "By enlisting," he announced briefly but firmly. "Yes," agreed Slim, "that is..."